9 o'clock. Thanks for joining us, Jim the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. It's Wine About a Wednesday with Talon Wine. You could win a bottle of Talon Wine today just by complaining, something you probably do in your everyday course of life. What about the Rockies? That's not hard to do. You can text or call us, 970-242-1340. All right, Scott Hastings from Altitude covers the Nuggets. He'll join us coming up at 9:20 this morning. Nuggets will get the Lakers in a rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals, and let us hope that it goes the way it did last time out, with the Nuggets getting the sweep against the Lakers. Lakers beating New Orleans last night in the play-in tournament to take on the Nuggets. All right, so you can text or call us, 970-242-1340, and also we'll have Fort Dan territory coming up and this day in sports history. But in studio today, always a pleasure to have the chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series, Jamie Hamilton, with us. Jamie, always appreciate seeing you in studio. And, of course, it's that time of the year where we start thinking about the Junior College Baseball World Series.
Yeah, we're right in the middle of it, Jim. Nice to be here again. It's always good to see you, and you've been a great supporter of our tournament over the years, and some of the memories are pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And more memories to be made, of course, coming up this Memorial Day weekend over at Sam Saplesio Field. And we've had a chance to talk to some JUCO coaches. We had Ryan Kogel, who's now Iowa Western's coach, was, of course, coach at Yavapai when they came here and won. So and had the chance to talk with him, last week, I believe. Wasn't a Buckeye when we talked with
Ryan? Yeah, last Thursday.
It was last Thursday we talked with Ryan. So I enjoyed that conversation with him. But as we get ready for the series this year, of course, we had instant replay last year, and it's an inaugural season. Just now that you had a chance to kind of go back and look at it, from a broadcast standpoint, which doesn't mean a whole lot, but but I thought it worked really well. That was very efficient. I thought they did a fantastic job of evaluating the play, making a decision, and it didn't slow the pace of play down at all. I thought it was very impressive how it all worked.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I didn't know how it was going to work either. I think the key to the success was having people on the field like Kyle Rush and Walt Bergman and Darren Colchinery that could help speed up the process too, as operations managers on the field, and then the great volunteer man we had in the booth, Randy Upton, who helped us up there as an umpire that's been here before, and just it just sped it up, and it really did not interfere, as you said.
So this year, of course, in recent years, we've seen the seeding come into play, now instant replay. Believe this is the first time in a couple of years we're not going to have any real significant changes in regard to how either the tournament, whether it's a seeding process or a thing like instant replay.
Yeah, no question. I think that got those changes done, and we're just going to proceed with having some great baseball. One of the things that we talked about, and you'll probably already ask me the question later on, but the thing that's going to be pretty unique as far as really giving us a greater view on a national level is all 19 games are going to be on ESPN Plus. So last year we just had the championship game, so I think that'll be a really good way to show the people around the country what we do and how great an event it is.
Kind of take us through that process from going from just the championship game to now having all the games televised on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, one of the things that the leadership at the NJCAA has done a really good job is trying to get their brand and try to highlight their national championships. And so they did it a couple of years ago on Division II, or excuse me, the football at Division I level. And then they got basketball this last year and tried the baseball just to see. And what they were so impressed in with the national contract that the NJCAA has, they said, we need to get all 19 games on. So that's what it did.
And so, you know, that's a great addition. Of course, that increases the national exposure of this tournament from coast to coast and around the world as well. Jamie Hamilton, chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series, with us. I have to ask you the question I ask you every year, banquet speaker. What is the status of that right now?
The banquet speaker has verbally said yes.
That's good. That's half the battle right there.
And but can't release it just yet, only because things can happen. And
sure.
But that regard, he's very excited, and people recognize the name, and it'll help promote our banquet. But as we always talk about it, it really is about the coaches going into the Hall of Fame and recognizing their their years of service. And, well, it's pretty unique here because we've argued with leadership and new leaders coming on, is the banquet really necessary? But it's a tradition that we've had right here. And what our predecessors did is really promote for this be the place to go, just like the Division One, to get to Omaha, that type of things. It's good to get to Grand Junction. And some of these coaches that were before I sat on that selection committee were before we maybe got two or three nominees, and now we're going through 20 to 25 nominees because it really is a selective process and they really want to get to Grand Junction. So it's about their night as well. Plus, we always know the student athletes like a free meal, so it works out well.
You know that from personal experience.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you're never opposed to a free meal when you're a college kid.
Exactly.
You get dressed up a little bit and go to the banquet. Always a great occasion with the banquet, of course, the Friday before the Junior College Baseball World Series. Jamie Hamilton, chairman of the JUCO World Series, with us today on the Team Sports Network. Now, as far as ticket sales, of course, online, give us kind of a timeline of when people can start thinking about tickets.
Yeah, thank you. Already we have almost $150,000 in sales.
Great.
On the reserve seating. Single game tickets and the passes go on sale May 1st, but you can check out our JUCO website, JUCOGJ.org, and see how to get those. And the 1 week pass is be available at that particular time.
All right. Let's take a quick look at the rankings this week. The JUCO baseball poll, as you mentioned, Ryan Kogel was with us, Iowa Western's coach. It's still weird to say
Mark not being there.
Of course, now at Western Kentucky, but Sean Doty and Gaston College, yep, they were here last year. They're number two in that poll. Johnson County, Florence Darlington, so Flodar, a team that's been here before. Georgia Highlands, Central Arizona, Crowder College, Tyler Junior College out of Texas, and of course you got Salt Lake Community College, D.B. Nelson and his crew were here last year, and then Walter State, David Shelton, and that group currently 10th in the JUCO baseball poll. So some very familiar names that have been here before, won championships, or at least been in here in recent years, Jamie, in the top 10 right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we're seeing, it, like you said, recent years. We're not seeing the same ones all the time. And I still have difficulty understanding their rankings because we've talked about this before. A lot of times the Texas teams, Arizona teams already have 15, 16 games in before the people back east even get a game in.
Right.
So it's really kind of hard to really take a good look at it until about the 1st of May. And then you can start seeing the teams that are really, you know, have the good chance to get there. And then what we love about is the stories when you have a one-game playoff and the underdog can win it and then get here to the national championship. It's always a great story.
I do want to acknowledge the passing of Whitey Herzog.
Yes.
Who, of course, spoke at the banquet, I believe it was 2002. I think it was early 2000s when Whitey was here. Manager of the Cardinals. One of the final boys of summer.
Right.
Whitey Ball with the Cardinals back in the day when they won a World Series. And just, I guess, just some reflections, some memories of Whitey Herzog.
Yeah, I can remember him coming to the games. He actually, instead of just coming in and speaking and getting out, he came to the game that opening Saturday and sat with us behind home plate. And the stories, I mean, the guy was nonstop, and our it interrupted the game because our ball shaggers were so enthralled they weren't shagging foul balls. We'll take care of this. You guys go do your work. But he was good, and just what a personality. And I've always been a fan of Whitey Ball because that's the way I was instructed,
sure,
and tried to do some things. And he was just a real legend and really embraced the culture that we have here at the Junior College World Series.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Was just did a fantastic job when he spoke at the banquet that year. And an incredible manager for the Cardinals back in the 80s with Tommy Herr and some of those guys that played for Whitey Herzog. Joining us today, Jamie Hamilton, chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series with us. Okay, since we're talking Major League Baseball, Rockies.
Use that in the same sentence?
Yeah, I will use that in the same sentence. Last time they have not... There's no relegation in Major League Baseball like European soccer.
Yeah,
they have
you're
not
still been in the big leagues, that's right.
And they don't have the worst record. White Sox looking at you, by the way, with two wins. But I guess just we expect it to be a rough year with the young players, and we expected maybe another 100-loss season. And we've been accused of trying to put lipstick on a pig a little bit in terms of some one-run losses and things like that because we can't beat on them all the time. But I guess just you being a baseball man, your thoughts about what the Rockies are going through right now.
Well, it's hard to watch, and to the point of what Connor just said, I haven't really seen them this year. There's not as available, and I'm not going to do the app to try to watch that, but obviously follow them on Twitter and their social media is just to kind of see what the feeling is in the clubhouse. And, you know, what are the odds of Freeland being a pinch runner and then getting hurt this early in the season? But I... You know, I enjoy a game. We still have people requesting our tickets to go. So sure. People still like the event, and I think that's what the management there is taking advantage of. But no, they've got to make big turnaround. I don't know what that involves, and maybe a best out of five with the Jackalopes. Maybe they can get a win a series.
Maybe they can do that. Huh? I don't know. Jackalopes that might put up a heck of a fight there with them. I don't know.
Who knows? Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. So.
No, it's. I think the way things are going right now, that's probably a fair thing to say, Jamie. Jamie Hamilton with us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. I guess just, you know, now that we're into another season with the pitch clock in Major League Baseball, the ghost runner, some of these things that have now been around for a little bit, just your takeaway when you do watch a game of the positives and negatives for you, Jamie, when you watch.
Well, that's interesting. I read an article just the other day that was talking about that pitch clock is really messing up some pitchers' routines, mm-hmm. and also get them a chance to get hurt a little bit more often, just because they're, you know, resting their body or just taking the big deep breaths and not really having that time. And it's kind of changing the arm angles they're talking about. It was pretty interesting, the scientific analysts that were talking about this thing. But at the most part, fans aren't, you know, it is there, and if it can be done in 2.5 hours, then it's done in 2.5 hours as opposed to three.
Well, last night's game at Citizens Bank with the Rockies and Phillies, what, the fourth shortest game in Citizens Bank Park history?
Wow.
Like 2 hours and change last night with the Rockies and the Phillies. And so there are pluses for fans that maybe attention span's not what it once was for a Major League Baseball fan. It's a good thing, but you're right, there's some other consequences that are coming from the pitch clock. And I know that, you know, doing Colorado Mesa baseball the other day, Evan Bunovich forgot to put his pitch com on. He's going to the dugout. I'm like, well, he's going to the dugout. Oh, what's going on? Like, to start the game, I'm like, oh, he didn't put his watch on. Yeah. And that's still stuff that occasionally, like at the collegiate level now.
That's a little bit too much. I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, what about that with JUCO, with pitch com, things like that? Is that something on the horizon?
I haven't seen any information on that they've even discussed it. And I would imagine the more affluent JUCO teams probably might be working with that because they can afford to get them. But there's some junior colleges that, as you well know, that it's all they can do to get the transportation to and from a game.
Sure.
So I would think that they would have to pass that by the coaches before they got to the national event. No, I haven't seen or heard anything about that.
One other JUCO-related thing to kind of wrap things up here. Tom Arrington, who came here so often with San Jack, now the Ravens, which is just
weird
change. But Tom stepping aside for more time with his family. I think some health concerns were part of his decision as well. But a guy that had been here so many times with San Jack stepping aside, and a guy that, of course, you know, and both of us and Buckeye as well, even around Tom Arrington, we all knew quite well.
Yeah, it's, you know, interesting because I started my career with JUCO when Wayne Graham was there.
Right.
And then they had somebody in between just for a few years, and then Arrington came in. So when I think of San Jack over my...
Hey, Chris Rupp.
Was
a really good guy. Really good coach,
that's
too.
That's right. Chris was good. And then over those 40 years now, when I think of him, I think of just those two, and that tells you why they're so good. Is you've had 2 to 3 coaches over 40 years. That says a lot about them. So, good luck to Tom and the Ravens are playing. It's interesting. The Parker Mitchell, I think, is his name, had a big league debut the other night for the Senators against the Dodgers. He was on the 2020 team with San Jack. But we didn't have the tournament that year because of COVID, so we would have had a chance to see him. Yeah. But there's another JUCO participant that's made the big leagues.
And that's so exciting because when you turn on the TV, you'll see either, hey, he played at San Jack, or he played at Cowley, or where the case may be, and then you see some of these guys that make their debuts.
Yep.
It's just pretty exciting stuff.
I agree.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, so once again, Jamie, JUCOGJ.org to get your tickets. banquet tickets, when do those go on sale?
Yeah, that's May 1st as well. So, okay. And we can reserve your tables now with our office is being manned down at our building. And so just call in and we'll get back to you and get your tables reserved.
All right, very good. So, of course, you'll hear every single game once again right here
awesome. On
the Team Sports Network starting Memorial Day weekend. And we plan on, we've already been in discussion about our coaches' roundtable, where our final four, so to speak, that we do with the final four teams and the coaches of those programs. So we had a lot of fun last year at Chick-fil-A doing that and looking to do that again the Thursday before the championship weekend of the Junior College World Series. Jamie, always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank
Great
you.
To see you. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Scott Hastings from Altitude covers the Nuggets. He'll join us next on the Jim Davis Show.
Stay by the radio. You're listening to the Jim Davis Show on the Team 101 FM, 1340 AM, Grand Junction. Talking Nuggets basketball with Altitude Scott Hastings on the Jim Davis Show.
And joining us right now, the team line calls the Nuggets on Altitude with Chris Marlowe. Scott Hastings joins us. Scott, always a pleasure. Good to have you back on so soon.
Yeah, you didn't believe me, did I? You called me anytime.
I called your bluff on it, man. I did. I said, hey, let's see if Scott's really going to come back on again soon. And you did. And you're a man of your word, sir, and I appreciate that.
No, have fun. I don't mind doing this.
Well, we love having you on, and we love getting your insight into the Nuggets. We now know it's going to be a rematch of the Western Conference Finals. Nuggets sweeping the Lakers last year in a route to the NBA title, and they're going to get LeBron and the Lakers Saturday night, first game of the first round after the Lakers last night beat New Orleans. You had Zion Williamson, an incredible game until he got hurt there late in the game. Scott left with an injury, but the Lakers move on. I guess just take us through your thoughts about this rematch with the Lakers and the Nuggets from last year's Western Conference Finals.
Well, you know, the Lakers to me are, we don't have to like them, but we can respect them, if that makes sense. They're one of the perennial NBA giants, right? They're the Jabbars and the Chamberlains and the Jerry West and the Magic Johnson. So there's this long traditional history that you have to respect there, and they've been an outstanding franchise for decades. They have been the ender of seasons for the Nuggets. In fact, last year when Denver beat them was the first time I think the Denver had beaten them in the playoffs in like eight attempts or something like that. Denver's now won eight straight games against them, swept them last year, and this series scares the heck out of me. I think they will do a good job of motivating themselves. I think LeBron James and all the trash talk that came out of Denver and everything else last year after the sweep probably settled a little smoke last year because Denver won the finals too. But I think LA thought that, hey, if we could have beaten Denver, we'd have beat Miami also. So this scares me a little bit. You're playing a team with two Hall of Famers. If no one in this matchup on Saturday were playing any more basketball, they have two Hall of Famers on their franchise. And they've really done a good job circumventing the salary cap to put pieces around those two guys. So I look at this as a huge challenge. I think it's going to be a huge motivational thing for them. It's scary for me. I think Denver is better from the standpoint of the first team, that their starters are better than anybody in the league. But if it gets into a depth type of series or game, I worry about Denver's depth, and I'm kind of worried about it all year long. I think it'll be fun. I don't think this is a traditional 8-7-2 series. I think this has a chance to be scary, but I still think Denver's the better team.
Nuggets broadcaster Scott Hastings with us today on the Team Sports Network. And last year, in the Western Conference Finals, D'Angelo Russell just got outplayed. The Nuggets played him off the floor. He's 4-for-11 for 8 points. And played just 8 minutes, 45 seconds in the second half of game one. He got humiliated last year. He had 21 points in their win over New Orleans last night. And, you know, he says that public humiliation has done nothing but mold me into the killer you see today. I think for the Lakers, if they're going to have, if they're going to be able to get past the Nuggets in this first round matchup, D'Angelo Russell has to play like that air quote killer that he says he's been playing at this point in time, especially the way he played last night, that win against New Orleans.
Well, listen, yeah, if he's playing like that, that's a whole new addition, if you will. It's almost like he was an afterthought last year, couldn't make any shots, and played scared. He played, after he started missing, he literally played scared, and why Darvin Ham benched him a little bit. But listen, you still got LeBron James, you got still Davis. When he decides he wants to play, it still can change courses of games. They signed Hachimura to a bunch of, you know, years after this, and you know, he's a 6'10" guy that was a high draft pick, and you know, D'Angelo Russell was the first or second pick when he came out. So listen, they've got talent. And they got motivation. If you listen to the locker room last year of Darvin Ham, he kind of set the tone right there that he's ready for this matchup. And I'm not sure the national media did any favors for Denver either by suggesting they should lose that game and then just try to win the next night so that they could play Oklahoma City rather than Denver. And I think that, listen, there's nothing worse when you challenge a pro player, especially some with character, and I think LA has character.
Scott Hastings with us today on the Team Sports Network. And then you look back to that matchup last year in the Western Conference Finals. Nikola Jokic, of course, is brilliant. We know how great he is and what a tremendous player he is. But Jamal Murray was kind of the guy that was really the difference. He averaged 32.5 points per game, nearly 3 steals per game during that series, during that postseason run, in particular in that matchup with the Lakers. Jamal Murray, once again, could be a huge and should be a huge factor for the Nuggets when this playoff series begins on Saturday.
Yeah, two guys that I think are key. I think Jamal Murray, and I've said this, you know, for the last few years since he tore his ACL, Jamal Murray is your heart and soul of the team. And when he is in it, he's rolling, and his mind is going, and you see the emotion. He can will this team. I love what the TNT crew said after post game. It said, listen, Joker's going to be Joker, but Jamal's the key. I would throw Michael Porter Jr. in there, too, also. You know, they swept L.A. last year in the Western Conference Finals, really with Michael just kind of being a minimal performer. But I think he's a giant key this year. And when he's stretching the floor, when he's attacking the basket, when he's being active, then you can throw on Murray and Joker doing stuff. Then they're absolutely hard to handle right there. And, you know, now KCP and Aaron Gordon can just give you, you know, the roll guy stuff. They can give you the lob dunk when I get doubled by Joker. I can, you know, Gordon's strong enough to bang against LeBron James. KCP, you know, if Russell gets too hot, they'll slap KCP over there on Russell. So I think it'll be a good series. I do not think it'll be a sweep. And I think those first two games in Denver are monster for the Denver Nuggets.
Nuggets broadcaster for Altitude, Scott Hastings with us today on the Team Sports Network. And then Nikola Jokic, all he did was average a triple-double against Davis last year in the Western Conference Finals. So Nikola Jokic, you know usually what you're going to get from him. And last year played really well against Anthony Davis. You referenced the bench, the concerns, because there's no Uncle Jeff, no Jeff Green. Bruce Brown moved on to Indiana as a free agent. The young guys, I think, have started to pick it up. As we talked about, I think the last conversation we had with Christian Brown, who played really well in the postseason last year, Peyton Watson and others. I still think, though, Reggie Jackson is a key. When Reggie is filled in, when he filled in for Jamal Scott, when Jamal was out with injury, did a nice job. But going back to the bench, it seems like, at least as of late anyway, that Reggie Jackson has struggled offensively once again. This team has tried to get behind him. Michael Malone's been very supportive of him. But Reggie Jackson, you need his best because you need that bench, which has got to replace, obviously, you know, what, and they've had to this year, those key pieces missing, as I mentioned, with Green and Brown. Reggie Jackson's going to have a really good postseason.
Yeah, there can't be the massive drop-off when the bench comes in there. And I think what happened with Reggie, you know, this is what his 13th year or whatever it is in the league. It feels like to me, and this guy's in great shape and he works stuff, but it feels like to me, because Jamal missed those games, that all of a sudden the guy who's expecting to play 18 minutes a game, all of a sudden now is playing 32, 33, 34. So he almost doubled the length of the season for him because of the minutes played, right? And I just think he broke down. I think he's got a couple knick-knack injuries, knees and ankles and legs and, you know, everything else the guys go through in the season. And now he's trying to do it at 33, 34 years old. And I think it took a toll on him. And you're right. You can't have games where your backup point guard is, you know, we'll see the minutes, but say he plays 24 minutes, goes 1-for-7. You don't survive games like that in the postseason very often. You can't have Mike, and I go back to Porter again, why I think he's key. You can't have Michael, you know, having games where he's, you know, 3-for-14 and 1-for-7 from the, you know, or 2-for-10 from the 3-point line. It's going to be tough to survive those games this year. I think the margin of error, losing Jeff Green, losing Bruce Brown, you've shrunk your margin of error. They're still good enough to win it. And if the starters stay healthy, I think they can win back-to-back or at least get there. But they've shrunk their margin because the bench hadn't done anything. And the bench has got to run, Jim. If you go back in the games that the bench started playing better, you know, they were getting stops. And Christian Brown the last, you know, what, 5, 6, 7 games of the season, okay, that's the Christian Brown that helped win you Game 3 in Miami last year in the postseason. That's that Christian Brown. He's not a smooth, you know, flow, George Gervin kind of handling dude. He's a wrecking ball at, you know, 6'4", 6'5", and whatever it goes, and he's got to throw his body in there and go crazy. That's what his role is. Another key is if Peyton Watson could be huge, and then obviously, he's from the Southern California area, so it'd be nice if he could have a good game. His offense, his confidence on his shot has been really poor most of the season, even late. But defensively, what he can bring to this team blocking shots is just, it gets you excited for the future. But then you're also now, you know, okay, make a shot once in a while. That's okay, too. So it'll be interesting. We shall see. We'll see if the minutes from some of the starters have during the regular season has taken too much of a toll in the postseason.
Of course, we'll have the game this Saturday night with pregame at 6, tip-off at 6:30, first round of the playoffs, Nuggets and Lakers right here on the Team Sports Network. And, of course, you can catch Scott on Altitude Radio, 92.5 over in Denver. Catch it on the app. Columbus, Hastings, and DMAC coming up at noon today. Hey, Scott, I always appreciate it. We're going to get you back on real soon again. We're going to hold you to that, promise again.
You'll hear me and Cause on Saturday night because right. First game's exclusive, so I'll be on the network Saturday night.
Fantastic. That'll be great. You guys do a tremendous job together. Looking forward to it, Scott. Thanks.
See you, buddy.
All right, take care. All right, Scott Hastings. We'll be on the radio call. That's right, I forgot. It's TNT
Heck
game.
Yeah.
Right. So looking forward to Scott and Jason Kosmiski with the call. Coming up on Saturday.
I had a question about Christian Brown, loaded, ready to go. And then he started talking about it. I'm like, all right.
Never mind.
Never mind.
Never mind, Scott.
It's all right. You knew where I was
answered
going.
Answered your question.
Yep.
All right. So, once again, Nuggets-Lakers game one of the first round of the Western Conference playoffs this Saturday right here on the Team Sports Network. All right. It is time to dive into four down territory.
We're into four down territory on the Jim Davis Show on the Team.
All right, first down. Bill Belichick has been kind of looking for a gig. Looks like he does have one, at least with Omaha Productions.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Peyton Manning has signed Bill Belichick to a deal. And it's going to be binding through next January, by the way.
Oh.
That ESPN, of course, has been pursuing Belichick. So they didn't want to do a studio show. And so now... there could be possibility of he does stuff with, because there's the tie, obviously, with Omaha Productions and ESPN, with the Manning cast, that they work out something, or maybe Belichick is possibly on Manning cast a little bit.
Oh, man.
Possibly. Even though that's kind of like a studio show, but it's not your typical studio show. But it looks like he could be part of Manning cast moving forward. So you can be okay with not getting top billing?
I don't really think he cares too much about that. I really think the basic tenets of, you know, we players play and coaches coach and we're on to Cincinnati. I think the basic of that is really his personality.
Because I think from an inside standpoint, I think he's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, he'll be great.
And it does lend itself, I think, with Manning cast to have more of an opportunity for him to go deeper dive into stuff. Because the way Peyton and Eli do.
He was on game day a couple times the last few years. Granted, it's talking Navy football, which is a soft spot for him. But it's not the Bill Belichick everybody knows from the Dunkin' Donuts banner press conference at Gillette. It's a different cat altogether.
Absolutely.
If they get more game day Belichick, he's going to be fine.
All right, you heard Scott Hastings reference it as we go to second down that there was assertions that the Lakers are going to try to lose last night, so they didn't have to play the Nuggets in the first round. Lakers coach Darvin Ham would have none of that nonsense.
That was a report of what? Saying what again?
I'd be better off if you guys lost this game to avoid that. That's a tough play.
Insane asylum sources say.
Sure.
Nah.
If you just accused.
Okay.
It was just chat.
Just someone that just got out of the insane asylum.
Okay. Well, questioning somebody's mental stability, Darvin Ham, on that. Third and fourth down.
Well, we talk.
You okay?
Yeah, it just, I couldn't hear
the question.
The question. So I was kind of like, are we frozen? So I was just kind of sitting here.
No, it was a little low. Gotcha. I had to crank it up.
So we talked about Clay Thompson's offer afternoon. Well, X/Twitter has an AI feature. It's still a work in progress. The social media app confused Thompson's brick field shooting performance with the 5-time All-Star throwing actual bricks, because it probably caught people saying the, you know, brick phrase for poor shooting. And one of the AI powered trending topics accused Thompson of going on a bizarre brick vandalism spree. That's how you know you had such a poor shooting night that Twitter's AI thinks you're vandalizing places. Oh, that's poor. Speaking of actual vandalism, Angel Hernandez still has a job. And the Foul Territory crew, Scott Braun, Ken Rosenthal et al., on the podcast there, which is really good, by the way, if you're a Seamhead, it's awesome. Scott Braun asks, where's the line someone will finally step in? And Ken Rosenthal replied, I don't know the answer to that, but there has to be a line, right? And then Rosenthal relays a story that he texted recently another MLB umpire, says, why aren't you guys embarrassed by this? Ken said the umpire was lenient on Angel Hernandez and followed it up with most umpires kind of like Angel Hernandez as a person. Rosenthal said he was stunned to hear that because there's enough evidence over the last years that has trickled out. Co-host AJ Przysinski says Angel's a nice guy once you have conversations with him. But at the end of the day, I'm judged on my performance. He should be judged on his very performance. True. Rosenthal also said that the conversations with the umpires were based on anonymity because they know the wrath of supporting Angel Hernandez. That's bad when guys coming to your aid won't even put their name on it.
Now, I'm supporting you, but not publicly.
Yeah.
With my name attached to it. Not great.
There you go. There's four down turn.
All right. Time for this day in sports history.
That's the story of the greatest sport moment of all of history.
It's time to take a trip back in time. It's this day in sports history.
All right, we go back to 1976. Mike Schmidt hits four consecutive home runs and drives in eight as the Phillies overcome a 13-2 deficit to beat the Cubs 18-16 in 10 innings at Wrigley Field. 1982, the Nuggets' Alex English, Dan Issel, and Kiki Vandeweghe each averaged 20 points a game, the first front court to do that since Bob Pettit, Cliff Hagan, and Clyde Lavallette of St. Louis in 1961. 1987, Dr. J of the Philadelphia 76ers becomes the third player to score 30,000 points in his pro career. Irving scores 38 points to join Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. 1995, Wayne Gretzky reaches 2,500 career points when he sets up a power play goal by Rob Blake. Would, of course, go on to play for the Avalanche, win a cup in LA's 5-2 loss to Calgary. And on this day, you know what this day is in Rockies history?
This is Ubaldo's no-hitter.
That would be correct. The first no-hitter and the only one yep. in Rockies history, dominating the Braves in a 4-0 win.
The only reason I remember that is because my best friend Chris, huge Braves fan, it's his birthday, and that no-hitter happened on his birthday. The only time
he happy birthday, Chris.
11 billion runners in that game. Bases loaded every inning, it felt like, but no hits.
But no hits. So. No hits. That's all that matters. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with some garbage time. That's next on the Jim Davis Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. What are the haps?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, Jim and the Buckeye Boy. Tomorrow's program, we'll have our team's Team of the Week brought to you by Rick Nelson, American Family Insurance, and also Who Is It Tomorrow as well, Powell's favorite game to play on a Thursday, so make sure to join us for that tomorrow. And lots of other.
Yeah, usual random shenanigans.
Wonderful sports talk right here on the program, and sometimes not sports talk as well. Particularly on a day like today, what about a Wednesday with Talon mm-hmm. Wine?
Sometimes it's barely even talk.
Yeah, sometimes. Just grunting.
Mm-hmm.
Just primal grunting.
Yeah.
Dylan's got one today. Want to whine about the stupid motorcycle lane splitting rule the state passed. Rockies suck, hoping Avs kick it into gear. Game one. Saw it the other day. Guy going right between the cars. Dylan, and this comes from somebody that rides a street bike. I've rode motorcycles for a long time. I hate it. The guy went just flying down between both rows of cars. I'm with you on that.
All right, so I'm going to borrow a phrase from Reddit. Explain it to me like I'm five. What exactly is this law? I'm not a motorcycle rider.
Okay, so what you can do in the past.
Because I watched the news the other night and it wasn't clear.
Okay, I'll explain it to you. We got time here
to do this.
Yeah,
we got plenty of time.
So in California forever, if you got two lanes of traffic and say you're stopped at a stoplight, for example.
Okay.
And what you could do is you could ride between the cars, the left lane and the right lane, the mid center lane. You can go down the center lane.
So they call it lane splitting, right?
Lane splitting. Okay. And you can be in the center lane. And then when obviously the light changes, you get into one lane. You can't ride down the middle of the road the entire time.
Okay.
But then you get back in a lane. And then if you come to the next stoplight, you can do the same thing. You don't have to stop behind all the cars in front of you in the left or right lane.
Right. You don't have to wait your turn like everybody else.
You don't have to wait your turn because you're special because you're on a motorcycle.
Okay. You choose to travel without doors and only two wheels, and you get to go first.
Because I think the feeling is, well, why should I have to wait behind all these cars when I can just go between them all? I'm not causing anybody any problems.
Have they seen some of the riders in this town?
I know, and that's...
Causing points.
I know, and so this is coming from me, and I ride a street bike. I'm not just dude that doesn't ride a motorcycle. Number one, I would not imagine trying to stick my Honda.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've seen the bike. It's not a small bike.
No.
It's an 1800. Trying to ride between two, right in the middle of the lane between two rows of cars. I cannot imagine trying to do that. Sport bike,
yeah.
Narrower, you know, thinner design. Okay, I guess, but why are you in such a damn hurry?
I see drivers in this town. If I'm on a motorcycle, I'm trying to ride on the sidewalk. And even then, I'm not really safe.
Oh, when I ride, man, my
motorists
head,
in this
head's
town.
On a swivel.
Yeah.
I mean, you ride, at least in the way I approach it, I ride with the utmost caution.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about in this program, where people, now red light does not necessarily mean red.
And there's a good chance that most of the drivers in this town on the road at any given time are lunatics.
Yeah.
No offense to anybody out there, but
when I've been riding my bike, I've never been so damn impatient that I need to ride between the cars down the center line to get to lane split, to get to the front, so I don't have to be behind everybody. I've never been that impatient. I think it's stupid. I think it's dangerous. I think it puts you in a lot of harm.
Mm-hmm.
Say, for example, I'm not paying attention and somebody for some reason decides to open their car door just briefly while they're stopped. They're going to dump a cup of ice or something out.
Yep.
Whatever. So I'm flying along. I don't know if you're going to open your car door or not. I'm assuming you're not going to, but you do. And so then, boom, I hit your car door. So, and I don't know this part of the law. Is that my fault? That I opened my car door and you were stupid enough to ride between down the center line?
Right. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand why this was so supremely necessary. I don't ride bikes, so I know there's probably a "you don't get it" portion.
Well,
of it.
Apparently I don't get it either. And
I'm confused. Like, this seems like, you know, why here? Oh, this is a good thing. This is a good thing for motorists. Like, well, I don't see how. That doesn't mean it's not. I just don't see it.
This is considered a lane filtering law.
That's where I was lost, because I'm like, splitting then, apparently. But apparently it is. All right.
Motorcycle lane filtering and passing law, signed into April, becomes effective actually in August. So it's not even, it's been signed into law, but it's not, doesn't go on the books until August 7th. And so for lane filtering means, as a motorcyclist, you can cut to the front of a line of vehicles that are stopped. It does not mean that you can cut in between vehicles that are moving. So vehicles are stopped, it's okay. I can't split the lane if we're moving in traffic. That is still illegal. Either way.
So is running red lights.
I just.
But as we've talked many times in this town, just because it's illegal doesn't mean people are not going
to
do it.
What's it? The road has lanes wide enough to pass safely. The motorcycle is moving 15 miles an hour or less and cannot pass on the right shoulder. Shoulders meant for emergency vehicles. No one should be driving on the shoulder, which I've never had a need to drive on the shoulder.
Can those sport bikes go under 15? I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know those sport bikes went under 80.
Had one once upon a time, and you know, they can do that. You have to start from, you know,
saw the oddest thing on a sport bike as I was driving home from Sepulveda last night. The gentleman riding it had both wheels on the ground. It was so strange.
Yeah, I know.
It was uncommon to me that this would be. Oh, I didn't know you could ride it that way.
Look, I have no problem with the little need for speed out on the interstate. You know, no offense to our friends at CSP or anything. You know, if you want to get on a little bit on the interstate,
no matter what we're driving
in a car or a motorcycle, if you choose to do that.
And there's nothing between here and Green River.
And accept the risks of a speeding ticket or death. If you want to accept those risks, then okay, go for it, man. I don't care, as long as you're not causing anybody else a problem, mm-hmm. and you're willing to pay the price for getting pulled over by CSP or Utah State Patrol.
I think at some point everyone's kind of. I wonder what triple digits feels like.
Yeah.
I know I have.
I know I have too.
But I don't. I try not to put anybody else at risk.
No, absolutely not. I just, my problem with it is this, that when does lane filtering in the mind of guys become lane splitting? That it's like, well, I can do this. Why can't I do that? And that somebody ends up getting killed because they decide that they're going to expand their interpretation of the law and they're gonna lane split.
What do they think they are, Angel Hernandez?
Yeah, when people are driving down the street, they're gonna split the lanes, and somebody dies riding a motorcycle, or somehow they create an accident that causes other people to be injured or killed. Once again, this comes from me riding bikes. Whether it's lane filtering, lane splitting, whatever, I've never felt that great need that I've got to get in front of everybody at the stoplight. I need to move to the front. Why? Why should I feel like I'm different than anybody else using the road?
And you know what this is also going to result in? Cars, trucks, usually trucks, that are going to now sit on the center line. Or the dashes of a two-lane, you know, they're going to sit in the middle specifically just so motorcyclists can't do this.
Yeah.
And it's because that's also the way people drive. Not just here in town, but that's the only place I'm usually driving is here in town with, you want to go the speed limit? Well, watch this. I'm going to run right up on your tail here. Or I'm not going to let you around, or I'm not going to let you go by specifically because you're in the left lane. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is
not
one.
Not fun at all.
It's one I just don't agree with. I don't see the need for it. I think it opens up the door for really potentially dangerous things to happen.
It feels like it doesn't make anything better. It makes things worse.
I can't comprehend the inability to wait till the light turns green and then the cars go through it. I get it. I guess if you're sitting and there's a long line of traffic, say it's a left turn.
Yeah.
And it's left turn only, and you have to sit there and you're behind a bunch of cars and you're going to miss the light, maybe. That's the only time where I could see, I guess that's why you would want to do that so you don't miss the light. But then again, I got to make sure I get out in front of everybody when you turn left, because which on a bike is very easy to do. It's not hard to, because of the way a bike accelerates.
But if you got to get into people and the notoriously unreliable stop at red lights law.
Yeah.
I mean, that's only inviting disaster.
Yeah. Call me an old codger or whatever. I don't care. I don't get why you'd be that impatient. I just don't get that. I don't get the lack of patience. You can't wait till the cars in front of you move to go through the intersection. I don't get it. Dylan, I'm with you. I ride motorcycles, and I don't get it. Marcus is giving me a preach on, brother. Preach on. Yeah, I just don't. It makes motorcyclists look bad. We already have to deal with a lot of negative stereotypes of people who ride motorcycles.
You already have to deal with a lot that's not inherently your fault.
Yeah. And so this is something, to me, this just adds to another reason somebody, motorcyclist.
Because that's what's going to happen.
Because when this guy did this the other day, I mean, I'm in my truck and I'm like, What the hell did he just do?
Yeah.
And guess what? It's not even legal yet, really. It does not go into effect until August.
Wait till you drive home today.
I'm sure you're gonna see it now.
That's gonna be conveniently forgotten.
Because somebody read that they got signed into law, so that means it's good to go. Well, no, it doesn't become effective until August 7th. Anyway, that's our show for today. Back with you tomorrow.
Thanks for the explainer. I appreciate it.
Glad to do it. That's what I'm here for. And likewise to you when you do those things as well. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 here on the team.